Good morning and welcome to Notes from the End of Time, the video edition. Today we're going to be talking about fear, more precisely the joy of fear, but let's start by talking about what is fear. Now, fear is an impulse that's controlled by the limbic system of our brain that's in a deep part of our brain. It's where the cerebrum and the cerebellum meet. So the first thing we need to know is fear is at the juncture between our autonomous reflexes, the ones we have no control over. For example, you touch a hot stove, your body instinctively jerks away from it. Or the higher mind, the higher self, if you will, of the cerebrum, where we can think about things and make a decision on what we want to do. Fear is an instinct designed to protect us. When we're frightened, it means we sense a danger, and our body goes into a response where we're saying, are we going to fight the enemy? Are we capable of fighting the enemy? If we're not capable of fighting the enemy, are we going to run away from this? We get the fight or flight response. Generally, in cases of danger, we don't have the time to go about figuring out, you know, gee, is this a danger? Let me contemplate it. Let me run through all of these rational things. And by the time I figured out that, yes, these are my enemies, I have a spear in my chest. And that really doesn't help. So we know that fear is here as a really powerful response for protection. We also know that being in a constant state of fear can have really detrimental effects to your emotional health, your mental health, and even your physical health. So, with all that in mind, the first question that arises is, why do we get off so much on fear? Why do we enjoy fear? Well, what do I mean by that? Go to the internet and see how many creepypastas you can find, which are short stories that are designed to put a chill up your spine, that are designed to give you this frisson of terror. Go to a slasher film, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. People have made millions of dollars producing movies. You know, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, old Leatherface. These are all cultural, not necessarily heroes, but cultural figures like Baba Yaga was, for example, to the Russians. So we also have a long tradition of telling ghost stories or telling stories to scare children. And what's going on here? Why is this instinct that we have to protect ourselves, this kind of unpleasant instinct, why do we spend so much money trying to find it and trying to enjoy it? Now, this fear for entertainment is largely harmless. People enjoy ghost stories without necessarily believing in ghosts. People go to Halloween haunted houses without later deciding to sacrifice neighborhood children to the devil. Most people don't see Jigsaw as a role model. So these are just harmless fun. You might wonder why I'm worrying about them, and realistically, I'm not. But there is one form of fear entertainment that concerns me. It's one that I think could become quite dangerous, and it's really popular online. And it is a type of news and infotainment which has come to be categorized as fear porn. And, well, what is fear porn? Let's look to a psychotherapist named Dr. Elisa Kaufman, and she has described fear porn as mainstream media content that deliberately and enticingly plays on people's fears about disaster, disease, and death. Certain media is intentionally trying to panic the public. In a way, they are violating your mind. Once again, I can't tell you whether or not fear porn is a cause or a symptom of our frightened society, but I can say there are an awful lot of frightened Americans out there. According to the American Psychiatric Association, between 8% and 12% of all Americans suffer from one or more phobias. At least 7% of Americans suffer from social anxiety disorder. Between 2 and 3% of Americans suffer from panic disorder and/or OCD, and 2% of Americans suffer from generalized anxiety disorder. That's people who have a diagnosable condition according to the DSM. There's lots of other people who live lives of quiet fear. There's a reason anti-anxiety agents are almost as popular as antidepressants. People are gobbling drugs like Valium and Klonopin like they're candy. We are a very nervous society, and we have been a very nervous society since at least the Industrial Revolution. In the 1950s, W.H. Auden released a poem called The Age of Anxiety. It's a very interesting poem. It's flawed, but well worth reading. One of its biggest fans, Leonard Bernstein, called his Second Symphony The Age of Anxiety. We've noticed this kind of just fear and loathing, fear and panic throughout our society. So why is fear porn so popular? Dr. Kaufman, who is a specialist in OCD and who suffers with OCD herself, has expressed concern that a constant stream of doom and gloom and fear porn can cause people who have their anxieties in check, they've managed through therapy and through medication or whatever other means to reach a state of somewhat stability, that all of that fear porn in their social media feeds and all that doom and gloom in the news can push them over the edge. And that's a very real problem. But for other people who are dealing with anxieties and panic disorders, there could be a certain kind of odd comfort in fear porn. When you're dealing with anxiety and OCD, most people who suffer with it understand on a conscious level that their worries are unfounded, that their rituals really aren't doing anything, but they can't stop it. Remember how I said the fear comes from the limbic brain at that point where your instinctive reactions meets with your conscious mind? You can understand that your fears are unwarranted, but still feel those fears. You know, you can know that your worries are silly, but that doesn't mean you can stop worrying. When you're dealing with fear porn and catastrophe, it gives you something concrete to be afraid of. It's, you know, when you have unwarranted fears and you know they're unwarranted, you feel like you're a crazy person. You feel like you're isolated. You feel like you have a disease you can't control. But when you are responding to fear porn that lots of other people are responding to, you become part of a people of community. All of a sudden, you have something real, or something that you feel is real, to be worried about. And that's a real comfort to somebody who's dealing with free-floating anxiety. And it's better, even if you can't control it, it's better to have something that you, a fear you know, rather than a fear you don't know or a fear you can't shake. A logical fear that you can do nothing about is less threatening to you, less isolating than, you know, your usual round of crazy fear. And if we have a lot of people who are living lives of quiet fear, you have an equal or greater number of people who are leading lives of quiet desperation and hopelessness. They're leading lives that they find unsatisfying, working in jobs they find unsatisfying. They find their romantic lives unsatisfying. These are not satisfied people. You know, their lives are kind of gray and they feel meaningless. For them, fear porn gives them that same adrenaline rush they get from watching slasher films. it gives you a sense of purpose, you know, what Viktor Frankl called man's search for meaning. You know, it gives you an enemy to rail against, and it gives you a little bit of excitement in what's otherwise kind of a boring life. And that's there's a huge attraction for that. That's one of the reasons I believe that the whole movement of canceling and all the political hysteria took off, is that you could be frightened of an enemy, and you had an enemy again. You could point at that enemy. You know, it's like, my life sucks is kind of a bad place to be in. My life sucks because of Donald Trump, because of Diaper Joe Biden, because of whoever else. Suddenly you have a target to dump those negative emotions into. And so that particular school of politics took off during, from like I would say 2015 to the present, and certainly got a lot bigger during the COVID era. And because people noticed this, because professionals noticed this, we have seen our fears being used to manipulate us. And let's talk about a few of the irrational fears that have been weaponized to get us to do what other people want. For the past several years, we've been hearing over and over and over again that white supremacism, fascism, and Nazis are the greatest threat facing American civilization today. You know, supposedly, we're only a little step away from Leni Riefenstahl filming the next Adolf Hitler coming in triumph while Hakenkreuzes are flowing in the wind and everybody is singing the Horst Wessel lead. And let's unpack that a little bit here. In 1995, a U.S. Department of Justice study determined the skinhead movement is active in 33 countries on 6 continents. It numbers some 70,000 youths worldwide, of whom half are hardcore activists and the rest supporters. The countries where skinheads are found in the greatest numbers are Germany, 5,000, Hungary and the Czech Republic, more than 4,000 each, the United States, 3,500, Poland, 2,000, the United Kingdom and Brazil, 1,500 each, Italy, 1,000 to 1,500, and Sweden, more than 1,000. France, Spain, Canada, and the Netherlands each have at least 500 skinheads. And now you're probably looking at me and saying, well, yeah, that's from 1995. Of course, the hate movement and hate groups has just grown exponentially since then. We have many more hate groups today. Well, not exactly. Let's take a look at the Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC. Has issued reports saying its 2022 report identified 733 active hate groups in 2021. That was down from 838 in 2020, down from 940 in 2019, and 1021 in 2018. So the SPLC, which is a group that's known to find hate, and it's known to err on the side of caution as to whether or not a group is a hate group, the SPLC is saying that we've seen a decline over the past several years. Let's talk about the numbers we've got there. 35,000 skinheads in 1995, even if we assume we've got the same numbers, you know, 35,000 hardcore skinheads and maybe 35,000 skin hanger-ons that are racist but not quite as violent as the others. That's not a really large number. Let's take a look at the biggest group today, one that's been in the news because of the January 6th insurrection that has been considered a great threat to American civilization, our happy band of multicultural supremacists, the Proud Boys. Wikipedia estimates, and Wikipedia is not a site that's really going to cover up hate. If anything, they're going to blow it up as much as they possibly can. Their estimates are between several hundred and 6,000 Proud Boys. Now, that's not really very big numbers for something that's supposed to be the greatest threat to Western civilization out there. You know, you're not going to overthrow a nation with that. You're not going to take over the world for Uncle Adolf. Come on, people. What chance do you honestly believe there is of people who are wearing swastikas and Sieg Heiling as LARPers? What are their chances of winning any kind of significant political power? Let's face it, the American Nazi Party has about as much chance of gaining control in America as a bunch of Confederate Army LARPers playing at Confederate battles has of retaking Dixie, and we know that. So why do we spend so much time and so much energy being worried about something that's about as much of a threat to our civilization as stormtroopers in white uniforms coming in and shooting badly while Darth Vader pulls a Death Star up over Earth?
Let's take a look at the number of people who have been killed by extremists in the United States. I'm going to use the ADL as my source here, and I know the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith has been known to pump numbers up sometimes. I know that there are going to be people that are saying these figures you got from the ADL are grossly exaggerated, if not a complete hoax altogether. But bear with me. Let's take a look at what they have to say. According to the ADL, in 2022, domestic extremists killed at least 25 people in the United States in 12 separate incidents. This represents a decrease from the 33 extremist-related murders documented in 2021 and is comparable to the 22 extremist-related murders in 2020. Now, I'm going to preface this here with saying, anybody who loses their life has lost everything, so we have to take any death tolls seriously. But every day around 17 U.S. veterans die by suicide. 25 deaths is a rough weekend in Chicago. And every year, around 28 people get struck by lightning and die from it. So, looking at these numbers, you have about the same chance of being killed by a white extremist as you do of being killed by a lightning strike. Again, it's if somebody dies, it's always a tragedy, but there are much more pressing issues of violence with much higher death tolls that don't receive anywhere near the attention that we're seeing over white supremacists, fascists, and Nazis killing people. The word Nazi has largely come to mean anybody whose politics I disagree with. Republicans are the real Nazis. Democrats are the real Nazis. Conservatives are the real Nazis. Libtards are the real Nazis. Homophobes are the real Nazis. Christofascists are the real Nazis. Everybody is a Nazi, and of course that means ultimately no one is a Nazi, and we're already seeing a lot of the stigma and the visceral power of Nazi imagery losing its impact. It's gone from being a sign of terror to becoming a sign, like, to becoming oven jokes. And however you feel about that, the fact does remain that the Nazi imagery retains enough emotional power that you can still use it as a cudgel against your opponents. I'm sure you've heard about the guys who go around Florida. One of them holds a sign saying DeSantis country, and the other one is waving a swastika around. They are trying to convince the world that Ron DeSantis is a literal Hitler Nazi, and... okay, I've spoken online to people who identified as Nazis. I'm probably going to get a black mark from the ADL for saying this, but I've actually even had some pleasant conversations. We obviously disagreed on politics, but some of them were articulate, intelligent people. I've talked to them. I have a little bit of an understanding of the ideology, and anybody who is identifying as a Nazi is convinced that the United States government is ruled by what they call ZOG, the Zionist Occupying Government. As far as they're concerned, all of our politicians are either Jews or being paid off and blackmailed by the Jews. They, an actual swastika-waving Nazi, is no more likely to vote for DeSantis than to vote for Menachem Begin. I mean, as far as they're concerned, why would we support one tool of the oppressive Jew over a different tool? It's very clear that the DeSantis country thing is an example to tar Ron DeSantis, so there are still at least some people who think you can win points with that. There were guys waving swastikas around at the Canadian convoy. Nobody knew who they were. They showed up. They started waving a flag that still had wrinkles in it as if it had just been purchased brand new, and then they disappeared. So you still see people trying to tar their opponents with the swastika, but it is genuinely losing its effectiveness simply because anytime you use the term, you bring it to a level where it's so nebulous, it ultimately loses all meaning. I think you could say the same thing about words like libtard, racist at this point, white supremacist. They, all these terms, whatever meaning they had in the past, the meaning they have now is I don't like you and you're a poopy head. And that's, you know, if you want to use those words, I suppose it's as good a release of tension as any, but you're not really conveying any actual meaning. And ultimately, people are going to start tuning you out the way they tune out all other meaningless noise.
And if we are going to talk about fear porn being used to manipulate people, let's take a look at the best example I can think of, and that's the way the COVID-19 outbreak was handled. Okay, I have to say, I do not believe that the COVID outbreak was entirely a hoax or that it was let loose in the hopes of establishing a one-world government, anything of that sort. I suspect that at least in the beginning, most of our elected officials were confused and frightened just like everybody else. However, I don't think that there's any question whatsoever that COVID was used to push through repressive measures and that people cheered on the government as they continued to stomp on civil rights. In January 5, 2022, at a point where the vaccine was out and COVID was really starting to come under control, a Rasmussen poll of Democratic voters found that 55% of registered Democratic voters supported fines for Americans who chose not to get a COVID-19 vaccine. 59% supported confining unvaccinated Americans to their homes at all times until they got the vaccine. 48% of registered Democrats believe that federal and state governments should fine or imprison Americans who publicly question the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines in mass media or on social media. 45% of registered Democratic voters favored requiring citizens to temporarily live in quarantine camps if they refuse the COVID-19 vaccine.
47% were in favor of a government tracking program for COVID-19 vax refuseniks, and 29% supported removing children from the custody of parents who refused the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, those are some pretty harsh measures. I'd have to, I'd say they're almost like Nazi measures, but that's a commonly overused stereotype, so I won't. But Democrats were so frightened by COVID, or were so thrilled that COVID gave them a chance to grab power and attack their hated neighbors, that they were willing to stand by and cheer while COVID vaccine resistors were rounded up in concentration camps, while COVID vaccine resistors lost their children, went to jail for questioning COVID on social media. These are not the actions of rational people. They are either the actions of frightened people who are lashing out like a drowning person grabbing for anything they can find, or they are the actions of smart, ambitious people who have decided they're not going to let a crisis go to waste, and they're going to take this opportunity to whip up the fear so as to get as much power as they can during this time of the pandemic. And we saw how this worked. The same people who were able to convince the PMC, a technocrat class, that we needed to censor the internet, to save people from white nationalism. At this point, it was to save people from literally killing grandma with this epidemic that's going to kill millions. And those same contacts that they made with Twitter to help prevent anti-vax hysteria, to prevent COVID misinformation, and I should add, a fair bit of that COVID misinformation has proven to be true. They were right when they said that masks had limited to no efficacy in stopping the spread of airborne coronavirus transmissions. They were right about ivermectin having some antiviral activity. There were a few things that people were right about that they were silenced for in the name of stopping a mass pandemic that was going to kill millions. And I can guarantee you that lots of politicians took a look at the way we responded to COVID and realized just how far they could go if only they could get the population frightened enough about something. Don't kid yourself. This is an example of fear porn that was used to gain political control. It worked, and because it worked, there's absolutely no reason to suppose that they're not going to continue using it for as long as they can milk this cow. Now that we know a little more about fear porn, what can we do to stop ourselves from being manipulated by our fears? The first thing we need to know is that we can't control our fear. It's a deep brain thing. It is an instinct. We can't stop ourselves from feeling fear. But what we can do is to control the way we react to the fear. Now, mindfulness is always good. Instead of getting yourself caught up in fears about what might happen, you can concentrate on what's in the moment and what you can do in the moment. That really makes an enormous difference. If you're reading fear porn because your life is kind of boring and unsatisfying, fear porn will give you an adrenaline rush, and it's probably, by and large, on an individual basis, less harmful than snorting cocaine or smoking crystal meth, but it's not a lot more productive than either of those alternatives either. If your life is unsatisfying and you're escaping from it with doom and gloom tales about what could happen or dreaming of an apocalypse that'll wash this whole world away and create a brave new one, maybe you should instead spend your time focusing on what's wrong in your life and the things that you can change. If you're having a discussion with somebody who's going on and on about doom and gloom and the latest poem, how the Rothschilds control the world, you know, the satanic pedophiles, like whoever it is, if they immediately respond to all suggestions on ways you could respond to this with, you know, quick dismissals of how that would never work and how they are too powerful for you to ever do anything, and of course all we can do is be victims, you're dealing with somebody who is using the fear porn as an excuse to avoid doing anything at all. The fear porn lets you, like I said earlier, the fear porn can give those with anxiety a concrete anxiety to believe in. Those who have given up hope can use fear porn as a reason for feeling hopeless. And you'd be amazed. They will cling to those fears like a security blanket, and any kind of evidence you show to the contrary that, well, maybe things aren't that bad, will be greeted immediately with, oh, yes, they are, and if you don't think so, you're just deluded. There's no productive discussion to be had with people that are really, really stuck in that mindset. If it's a family member, you can be loving. The old smiling and nodding technique works well when you're dealing with somebody you have to deal with. If you're dealing with somebody you don't have to deal with and they're making you uncomfortable, well, don't subject yourself to stuff you don't have to. You are perfectly allowed to walk away from acquaintances or groups or chat rooms or whatever where you find you're just getting too damn blackpilled. There's nothing wrong with that. When you're reading fear porn, check for where, like, who's publishing it and what are they getting out of it. You'll find, for example, a lot of the people who are writing about catastrophes and about prepping for, like, the inevitable new world order and the government are selling either precious metals or prepping supplies. It's not hard to figure out what they're trying to do here, and as a few people have pointed out, the people who say that gold is the only thing to have, like only thing that will be valuable when the inevitable collapse comes, aren't hoarding the gold, they're selling it. So stop and think about that for a while. Ultimately, maybe the best response to fear is to use it in the way nature intended. Fear is your body having its fight or flight response triggered. If you are afraid and there is something you can do to conquer that fear, then fight that fear. You know, if you're afraid of a test, then study hard, do your best. You know, I can't guarantee you you'll succeed, but you'll do better than if you just throw up your hands and wait for the catastrophe to happen. If there's nothing you can do against the thing that you're afraid of, then you can either see how can you avoid the situation. You know, if you can't fight it, run from it. If neither of those are possible, about the only advice I could give you would be the serenity prayer. You know, grant me the courage to change what I can, the serenity to accept what I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference. So with that being said, until next time, this is Kanaz Filon. This was Notes from the End of Time, the video edition. Thank you so much for tuning in. See you next time. And in the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe.